coming up on show 1112, Unplugged Performance unveil their Pikes Plaid, their name for a very rapid Model S racer. Stick around, I've got all the details. Also today, we're talking not one, but two stories on electric buses. The UK's building gigafactories and the Russian EV industry rarely gets a mention, but we'll have a look today. But good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. For Sunday, 13th of June, my name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story so you don't have to. And this podcast being recorded a little bit late because, well, I didn't have a voice, frankly, and so I couldn't record it. And it's just coming back now. Nothing to worry about. Just a head cold, but my goodness, it's wiped me out for about a week, actually. Okay, let's kick off with news of Unplugged Performance, the unofficial performance arm of Tesla. You know how Mercedes have got AMG. So Tesla don't own them, but they are in the building next door to them and have a very long-standing relationship. So close, in fact, that of the 25 Model S Plaid versions that were handed over, some to staff, some to customers, and one to Unplugged Performance, who promptly... Well, I would love a new Model S Plaid. Frankly, it's £130,000 worth of car. I'm sure you would as well, but Unplugged Performance have got no issues with stripping the thing out and making it go faster. So, after Elon Musk did the delivery event, the 1,020 horsepower Model S Plaid was promptly shipped to Unplugged Performance, who will be taking it to Pikes Peak, the International Hill Climb, and their resident racing driver Randy Pobst says, Motor Trend, the interior is stripped out. Airbags, center console, door panels, all gone. Unplugged Performance took the tri-motor Tesla, added a roll cage, a racing seat, a six-point racing belt, and after three laps of trying it with the silly yoke steering wheel, sorry, it's not even a wheel, is it? Took out the yoke because it doesn't work when you're trying to drive on a circuit. But they gave it three laps before taking the thing out and putting a racing wheel in. The body is stock. They've added a front splitter and a big adjustable rear wing, though. And the Plaid version of the car, which they're calling Pikes Plaid, nice name, has all the factory air springs, got custom dampers, three-way and adjustable roll bar, car riding on slick tyres and forged aluminium wheels and some more mods as well. So we're looking forward to seeing Randy Pobst doing that hill climb at Pikes Peak with a car that is insanely specced in terms of performance and not just the 0-60 dash, but how well that car is said to perform at continued high performance runs, something that the Tesla have worked really hard on to ensure that, I mean, if you're doing track days or whatever, it accounts for 0.000% of whatever people who ever buy this car. The people who buy a Tesla and take it to a track, it gets attention because they tend to be people who also make YouTube videos or a vocal or want to tell people about it, which is cool, but no one's taking it on a track, really, are they? You're doing your grocery runs and taking the kids to school in most cars, but I can't wait to see what they do with this. However, it's a bit like crash testing cars. You've got to do it, but still... 25 cars made, handed over, and one of them gets entirely ripped apart to make it go quicker. But there we go. Let's talk about buses. ADL, Alexander Dennis Limited, a legendary name in buses, for those that are interested, are making an EV bus for the US. A double-decker, well, I would call it. Does the word double-decker translate around the world? I hope so. Unveiled their first all-electric three-axle twin-deck bus for North America. They've been doing some trials and now it's launching for the US market, says electrive.com. It's 45 foot. It's called the Enviro 500 EV. It will fit 82 passengers, 53 upstairs, and an electric portal axle with hub motors. That's 225 kilowatt motors on this. How big is the energy? Well, the battery is quite sizable, 648 kilowatt hours of battery. That is a lot of cells needed. It sits low for better stability. Charging is done via standard CCS socket, CCS1, I suppose. It's a US vehicle, so fantastic news there. And a second story about buses as well. The Chinese EV maker BYD introducing their new electric Type D school bus for the US in three different lengths, 10.6, 11.6 and 12 metres long. 84 passengers on board this as well. Most notably as well, the school bus is already equipped with bi-directional charging. BYD saying the bus can be charged overnight when demand and prices are low and the grid is greener. And then, during the day, once the school run is done in the morning, according to the website The Next Web, it will feed energy back into the grid when it's needed. The bus features a lithium iron phosphate battery, has 250 kilometres of range. That is about 57 more than the EV school buses from their competitor Bluebird. Very famous name in school buses in the US. Although it's unclear when and where BYD's new school buses will debut, the announcement comes in sync, though, with Biden's EV infrastructure scheme. Here in the UK, we're talking about gigafactories. Britain is in talks with six companies to build gigafactories to make EV batteries, the Financial Times reporting earlier this week. Citing people briefed on the discussions, says Reuters, Ford, Nissan, Samsung, Britishvolt, InnoBat are all talking to the British government and local authorities about locations and potential factories and potential financial support. Hey, so there's some of that government money flying around, I'm sure. Lots of people will be open to talking. According to the local authorities, looking at locations for potential factories and financial support, the British government's plan to prohibit the sale of new pure combustion cars from the end of the decade, 2030, and plug-in hybrids from 2035 does mean the vehicle plants will need to be built. Whether we have them done in the UK, of course, we're not part of the EU anymore, so that does put some restrictions on trade, but we'll wait and see. We haven't got a massive car market. It's right-hand drive, of course, but we do sell enough cars here for, I guess, companies to want to make cells here. Nissan already have a Sunderland plant, one of the three places the Leaf is made, and so understandable that there's going to be investment in the UK with gigafactories. Do the cells need to be made on this island? Well, not necessarily, but it would certainly be good to have a battery industry when you think about the future of not just EVs, but energy storage as well. Really, really looking forward to hearing more about that. There's 40 to 50 gigafactories either being built at the moment in the EU or in permitting, catching up to China. Far behind China, which is still the gigafactory capital of the world, but Europe's certainly making some big, big investments. I mean, everybody has to, because if you want any say in the game in the future, you need to have a cell supply. Let's talk about the Russians next. We haven't probably done a story on the Russian EV industry in the last 12 months, and I'm not sure there'll be too many more in the next 12 months, but the Russian government says they will invest 777 billion rubles. What's that in something you understand? $10.5 billion in electric and hydrogen vehicle development by 2030, according to documents obtained by the Vedomosti news outlet and reported by the Moscow Times. In the next 9 years, Russia's EV share of the market will hopefully grow, they say, from 0.05 to 15%. But it just goes to highlight how there's no EV market in Russia right now. 0.05% of new cars sold. Officials at the Ministry of Economic Development saying by 2030 there could be 1.5 million EVs on Russia's roads, with 20,000 new charging stations according to this plan. A country that is certainly not yet on the EV bandwagon. Let's talk about Tesla. And this article from CNN Business is, it kind of sums up something that I've felt a little while about Tesla and Elon. I'm not a Tesla owner, I'm just a huge fan of the company, and I get equal complaints and comments on my videos and podcasts of, you talk about Tesla too much and you don't talk about Tesla enough, and you hate Tesla and you love Tesla. So you can do, when you talk about this subject, there's no winners, by the way. I know I'm probably upsetting somebody, but the CNN article says that Elon Musk desperately needs a number two. And that I would agree with. He's not likely to be stepping aside anytime soon, but it's evident he has many interests and some say distractions, particularly cryptocurrency and Dogecoin and Bitcoin, says CNN Business. Makes no sense for Tesla to be essentially a one-man show. You know, if you apply the hit-by-a-bus test, and of course we wish nobody any harm, but you know, the world is unpredictable and the worst can happen at times, and a Tesla without Elon overnight is kind of interesting to think about. And at SpaceX, you know, they would be more than fine. They have a very established COO, Chief Operating Officer, Gwynne Shotwell, one of the company's first hires, incredibly capable and could step in and does run SpaceX when Elon does the talking about the company. But why not have someone like that at Tesla? They've been suffering a brain drain recently, losing people like J.B. Straubel and their previous head of automotive, Jerome Guillen. The 11-year Tesla veteran has been recently running their trucking division, but only since March, and then had left the company mysteriously last week with no announcement of handover, including a very quick sale of his stock in the company. Now, that's not good. If you are confident about where Tesla is going and you've got inside knowledge and you leave the company maybe to spend more time with friends and family, that's understandable. But overnight, you don't then sell your stock. And he hasn't sold all of it, but selling large chunks of it, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, he'll be fine, don't get me wrong. I'm not worried about him. I'm just saying, something isn't right in that situation if you think that they're going places. You don't then cash in your chips. So I am a little worried about that side of it. I think the products they're making are still exceptional, still the best batteries out there, still the best software, still the best charging network, hands down, and still the best experience of driving an EV. David Whiston, is an auto analyst at Morningstar, said in an email to CNN Business, the only executive left who might make sense to be a successor would be Drew Baglino, Senior VP of Powertrain and Energy, been with the company since 2006, been on stage with Elon recently, and is a rising star in the company. But yeah, I completely agree. I just like somebody there, a nuts and bolts guy or girl, a COO, someone who can take on those kind of tasks of just getting on and running the company and letting Elon tweet about cryptocurrency. Okay, let's talk about question of the week. I was saying recently that I really hate the noise the Renault Zoe makes, and I'm pleased that you can turn it off with a little switch on the dash, although it is next to the open charge port button, so I've often gone to turn it off and opened up the charge port, completely user error. And the new Kona that I'm driving at the moment is fine, but it beeps in reverse, which is weird. I know I'm reversing. I selected reverse. You haven't got to beep like a truck to tell me you're reversing. So I thought I'd put it to you on question of the week. The community, the best bit of this podcast, really, is what noise should EVs make. Rajiv says, my Volt makes an ethereal moaning at low sound that I'm not a fan of. That's the best way to describe any EV, an ethereal moaning. I understand that. Being said, regulations mandating low speed sounds are increasing. Be interesting if these could be changed, downloaded, or made like ringtones. Perhaps you could even decide which one gets played based on your GPS location. Liam from Ohio says, I'm not an EV owner, but I think car makers should put a microphone under the hood of their EV so that you can hear the motor sounds inside the car, of course, with an adjustable volume. I love the sound of the motor whine and how cool the old GM EV1 used to sound. As for fake motor sounds, Porsche, Audi and Jaguar have nailed it, in Liam's opinion. Don't really care for the fake sounds of the e-Golf and the Mach-E when accelerating. James Coyle says, I have to agree, the Zoe pedestrian noise is annoying, but it comes in useful when driving in busy town areas with lots of people walking around. The button to turn it on and off is in an awkward place, and if there was a button to turn it on, the steering wheel would be a good place. You could turn it on at will in supermarket car parks. Yeah, that's the only place, James, that I tend to have people walk out in front of me. I don't have it on streets, really. People look for cars, but in supermarket car parks, people tend to just walk and use their ears and walk in front of me. Next, let's talk about Ian Harrison from Hull. I'm a blind enthusiast of electric vehicles, but do worry about not being able to use yet another of my senses while out and about. So few drivers fail to recognise the significance of a white cane or a guide dog compared to with years ago, that crossing uncontrolled roads is a gamble. Perhaps cars could be taught to notice the cane or the profile of a guide dog and its owner, and perform a beep whether or not your system is switched on. Silent cars, when combined with this fad for shared spaces, is a double whammy for both the blind and even parents with small children. Can I give a shout out to Motability UK? They provide leased vehicles to the disabled and are slowly increasing their range of EVs like the ID3. I can't wait to get my wife an electric vehicle next time around. Ian, thank you so much for taking the time to email me your thoughts from a very different perspective to what I would have. Stephen Harris says, so far as EV sounds are concerned, they should be silent, says Stephen. However, having the option to change the sound of the horn or have two different buttons so the driver can give a warning in the right circumstances, the usual horn can scare the living daylights out of unsuspecting people. I agree. Whereas he's a bike bell is universally recognised as a warning that you should be aware of what's around you. I know what you mean, like two horn buttons, one for the horn and then one for just, I don't know, turning on some sort of pedestrian noise. Mark Orico says, no artificial noises, please, inside or out. There are some nearly silent piston cars out there. It's on the driver and it's on the pedestrian to avoid being run over, is his opinion. When I got my Niro in February, I had it 2 days with the reverse beeping and pulled the bumper off to disconnect the speaker. My first new car ever, and day two I'm pulling it apart. I got an EV partly for quieter vehicles, not to wake my neighbours up when I back out of the garage. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Mark, actually. It's something with the Kona that is, I've mentioned a couple of times, I just don't appreciate the reverse beeping. Like, I don't need to think that I'm driving an HGV, you know. I can see all around me. It's got cameras. It doesn't need to beep. Alan says, to me it's very clear there should be no rules about EV noise at all. Regulation should be technology agnostic. Minimum external noise limits should exist for all vehicles at low speed. I think the current AVAS regulations allow for a lot of freedom under engine-like noise. Equally, maximum external noise should be regulated. There are standards for drive-by noise, but regulations on maximum noise at low speeds are a good idea now that a lot of cars simply have a speaker under the hood and could easily be abused. As for internal noise, I don't care if you want your EV to sound like a V12, go for broke, he says. Hey, thank you to everyone who contributed to Question of the Week this week. And let's add a brand new question for next Sunday. What's the best way that you like to navigate an EV journey and charge on the way? And if you're not an EV owner yet, how would you like to be doing it if you are a future EV buyer? Do you use your smartphone in advance? Do you use the car's internal system? Let me know. What's the best way to navigate an EV journey to charge on the way? Let's talk navigation on Question of the Week. Email me your thoughts. I'll read them out on Sunday. It's hello@evnewsdaily.com. Hey, we just about got there to the end with my voice hanging in. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com, Derek Riley and the EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and eMobility Norway. Hi to our partners David and Lisa Allen, Bob Boothby. Now, Bob and the family are at Millbrook Cottages. If you want to get away in the UK post-COVID and treat yourself to an amazing break, they do five-star gold self-catering cottages. It's something very special in North Devon. A real treat as well. Check out Millbrook Cottages. Darren McCleskey from DeNovo Real Estate. Hi to Yucca Kukkonen from Shift2Electric.com. Rajiv Narayan, Ian Sear, Juliet Sodergren, and Michael Lumley. Have a great day, and I'll speak to you soon. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.